Hey there, I'm Wendy Vaughn, Sales Success Coach. They call me the Queen of Predictable Sales Results, well, because of the easy formulas I share that create sustainable and predictable results for my clients. And I am so glad that you've tuned in to today's episode of the Selling Made Easy Show, because this show is all about inspiration, not just in demystifying the client getting process, known as sales, but also in peering through the lens of guest entrepreneurs who are blazing their own trails. And those trails have probably included a few unexpected roadblocks, maybe even including having to overcome fears or blocks about sales. Now, I believe everyone has their zone of genius, their superpower that's a gift to others, including you. Now, for me, after 22 years of outperforming my peers in sales results, it's almost an X-ray vision that I have when it comes to finding and fixing any sales blind spots within entrepreneurs that are unknowingly causing clients to slip away. And with today's guest, his zone of genius is his ability to help people discover and harness the power of storytelling to allow them to connect authentically with others. So I am super excited to introduce Matthew Taylor. Now, Matthew is an award-winning author, professional actor, storyteller, and narrative coach who has been entertaining audiences throughout the United States and internationally for the last 25 years. Now, transplanted to Colorado from the small sailing village of Itchener, England, Matthew is a partner of ACE Entertainment, which has written and produced over 25 original shows. Now, encouraged from the popularity of the ACE show, Tales of an Englishman, Matthew continued to commit his stories to paper, which have now been compiled into the book, Goat Lips, Tales of a Lapsed Englishman. Now, Goat Lips is an Amazon bestseller, received the Independent Publishers Book Awards Gold Medal for Humor, and was a National Indie Excellence Award and USA Best Book Awards finalist. Now, Matthew not only teaches storytelling, but also loves telling stories. He's a two-time Moth Story Slam winner and the current Moth Denver Grand Slam champion. Now, he founded Persuasion Through Narrative in 2010 to teach communication skills through harnessing the power of story, and has quickly gained a strong reputation as a speaker and business educator, especially within the legal profession, educational institutions, and with entrepreneurs. And to complement his professional side, Matthew loves to bike, ski, sail, and is a proud husband to Susan and father to Maitland and Alistair, who keep him laughing constantly. Well, welcome, Matthew. I am so excited to have you as our guest today.
Well, thank you, Wendy. I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah, and I just love how you're really making such a big impact, not only through acting and storytelling, but also in helping people understand really how to utilize storytelling as a way they can increase their own effectiveness. I really can't wait to hear more about this.
Good. Yeah, I love chatting about storytelling, mainly because it's something we all do all the time. And it's such a powerful tool, but people, just like anything that's around us all the time, we kind of get used to it and we don't always recognize the opportunities. And so, yeah, any opportunity to chat about it, I love it.
Yeah, this will be great. So I'm curious, exactly what was the inspiration or tipping point that prompted you to become a narratives coach?
I found I've always been an entrepreneur all my life, like on different levels and different pieces. But the one thing I've always noticed is usually necessity is what drives me forward. And this was one of those cases where ACE, and we're still together and creating and doing work, and which actually is an acronym for an American, a Canadian, and an Englishman. And I am going to allow the audience to guess which part of that I am actually of ACE. But Linda and Barbara, who are my, Linda is the American and Barbara is the Canadian, they actually created a show that was called Girls Only. Quite understandably, I wasn't in it. And it was a really successful show, so it made sense for our company to run it, which kind of left me out, kind of going, okay, what do I do now? And I'd always loved story and narrative, and that was always the glue for all the work that I'd always done. And I was offered to teach a workshop at a local improv theater, the Bovine Metropolis down in Denver. And I said, yes. And so I did it. I had seven people in the workshop. And out of those seven people, four of them hired me individually afterwards to work with them. Wow. And I was like, oh my gosh, there is a business here. Yeah. And here's, it's that opportunity that just stood up suddenly.
Right. Oh, that's fantastic. I love that. So you've been working as a narrative coach, sounds like for a decade now, which is, it's quite impressive. Now, has your business vision or mission changed since you first began this aspect of your profession?
Absolutely. It was, I would love to say that I had a crystal clear plan and it just ran smoothly. Not quite the case.
I love to say that, right.
But it's those moments of, I've always been a believer that we are always offered opportunities. Things constantly, we're like bombarded by them. And it's whether we recognize them or whether they just slide right by is you know, what navigates where you go in the world. Mm-hmm. And for me, one of the people that was in that first workshop was a gentleman called Don Knight, who was a capital lawyer. So he worked with death penalty cases. And he hired me. And then he introduced me into the legal world, which I spend a lot of time working in now, because storytelling is such a powerful part for that world, especially in the criminal defense world. Mm-hmm. And so that was one where it just kind of navigated off. And then I discovered another one that went off into the realm of like the educational realm. And then entrepreneurs kept coming towards me and saying, we need to raise money, or we need to sell, or we need to try and sell this idea. And often they're operating with things that are completely different to how the world's thinking currently. And so they really need a powerful story to be able to make people leap across to the kind of new thoughts that they're having. And so each time, all of these moments kind of collide, and you kind of gather them and then refocus and move forward in a new way.
Mm-hmm. It's being very observant, very tuned in, and kind of keeping your peripheral vision always open and stepping up to new opportunities. It sounds like you've been very, spot on with seeing where the trends might be. I mean, going down the criminal defense attorney route is quite unusual. I had not heard of how storytelling is so powerful within there, but now that you're mentioning it, I can totally understand that.
Yeah, it's interesting how it's right across the legal profession on all sides. You hear it again and again, and they're like, tell the client's story, or tell the story so the jury can connect and be able to understand. And yet law school doesn't really have time to ever teach it. And so that was one of the avenues that I discovered. And that idea of being able to turn and adjust as you're an entrepreneur, I think my improvisational background has served me very well, in the sense that I can pivot reasonably quickly most of the time. Not always, of course.
Yeah, I can totally get that. So now, have there been any big roadblocks or challenges that you've had to overcome along the way?
Absolutely. Mainly me, which is one of them. I'm sure, like most people, but certainly for me, I have these strengths that I play to all the time and I love. And so anytime it plays to one of my strengths, such as storytelling or connecting with people or teaching and being able to guide people and pull stories out of them, it's super easy for me to do it. But then on the other side, when it comes to like the business side or the sales side and the follow-up and the organization, cripplingly difficult for me to do. So I am constantly battling with those ones. And the other element of that is for me to always try and keep, I always like to think of, don't let the highs get too high or the lows get too low. Because, and I think that's it's one of those things as a solo entrepreneur, you just can't celebrate too high, and you can never let yourself get too low. So you kind of keep this even rhythm. But yes, the businessy side of things, I've always battled a little bit with.
Yeah, well, that's understandable. We aren't exactly born with all the tools in our toolbox to start a business and run with it. So what did you do to overcome some of those skill set limitations, when it came to, the business aspects of running your solopreneur business?
I try to kind of surround myself with people that can have skill sets that are different from myself. and then do something that's very difficult for us humans and for myself just as much as anybody, and that is listen. And if I can truly listen to people and try and draw from it, and then I can try and kind of do the very best I can to get more efficient in those areas that I tend to have weaknesses in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's sound advice right there. Just realize that you don't have to be everything and that others have that expertise. So obviously you are an expert at the art of communication, and especially through storytelling, which is extremely effective when it comes to really helping people understand a new concept or even take action. So what this is leading up to is tapping on my core competency, which is the sales process. So with that level of expertise in communication, how do you feel about your sales role and how has the client enrollment process been for you?
I think it ties right back into what we just were chatting about. There's an element of it that is effortless for me. So if I end up in face-to-face meetings or we're out in a social engagement and meet somebody and we're chatting about story and how it works, invariably those people become clients really rapidly and very easily. And we can discuss things and chat about it and it just happens. Mm-hmm. When we shift over to the other side where I am having to be strategic, such as picking up a telephone and calling people, and organizing follow-up with those people and putting some kind of strategy, it's an absolute disaster. Fortunately, I'm very lucky in the sense that I have quite a lot of referral business, which kind of softens the fact that, in all honesty, if I didn't, that would probably have sunk my business. It's not something that I find easy to do.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty common. You're definitely not alone in that. You know, when it comes to the actual task-oriented things, it sounds like you're tapping into your genius as far as the ability to get people excited and feel your passion when it comes to how powerful storytelling can be. But what I hear you're saying is when it comes to just the mechanics of lining up prospective clients to reach out to and then following up and trying to move that process forward, that's where it gets a little dry for you, eh?
Oh, it totally, that and also trying to keep it focused, like keeping it niched. I'm like, everybody can use this. And I'm like, that's my whole, look at the telephone book, that's my sales people. And I'm like, it's completely overwhelming.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that can be overwhelming. So earlier when you were talking about how your business vision and mission changed and you realized there were certain areas where you were tapping into that had a definite appreciation and awareness for the use of storytelling, have you stayed within those niches? Because the good news and the bad news is, like you said, your business is quite effective for others to learn the art of storytelling, whether they're school teachers or various different walks of life. So I'm just curious, have you created some sort of a specific outreach that you're pursuing, or is it still pretty broad?
I did a while back, I made that decision that there were those three buckets, which was the legal profession, education, and entrepreneurs. And so my goal was always, if I'm going to spend time selling, I will only sell to those areas. Mm-hmm. But if business comes in from other areas just out of the blue, like I do, I've done quite a lot of work lately in the medical kind of side of things, and working for things like leadership teams in like hospitals and pieces like that. And so it's great if they come in, but I will always just focus back, and in all honesty, mainly towards the legal profession. Education's been much harder to get into of late. And as much as it's such a passion, I also have to balance it with earning a living. And it's difficult sometimes to get, for them to have budgets at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I don't know. This is not really a sales skills or techniques. This is more of an activity of time management, but would you like a little technique here to maybe organize your outreaches
in a way? I am always open for advice and ideas. Absolutely. I would love it. Well, and if there's any on the other side as well, it would be great.
Well, from the days of when I held a role in the corporate sales world, the demands were quite significant in terms of output. And in order to juggle it all, including the administrative side and all the other sides that I really didn't care for, I found the only way that I really kept up on some of those things that it just really wasn't the essence of something that I looked forward to, but had to be done, just blocking out, a specific time of day that was consistent, but yet didn't, wasn't counterproductive. For instance, obviously blocking out a time slot at 5 p.m. in the evening to do your follow-ups is probably not going to be very effective, but, earlier in the day, understanding that, of course, your schedule is probably changing quite a bit from day to day, which does make that a little bit tricky. But for me, anyway, and a lot of my clients, it seems if they can just put a time on their calendar to do something that is not really the top of their list as far as the fun factor, but has to be done in order to keep the momentum going, and then just there's no argument or trying to fit it in or, oh, I'll be getting to that next. It's easier to just step into that structure if it's already on your calendar. But like I said, that may or may not work for your business mode. I don't know. Any thoughts there?
Absolutely. And I think that makes a whole ton of sense as long as I honor it.
Yeah, of course.
which and when somebody else tells me that, do you have an advice? When people say that, I always end up putting like an hour block on it. And I'm just like, I'm not sure if that's really effective. Do you think it might be more effective for me to put a 15-minute or a 30-minute block? And so it's something I can do and then maybe do another one? Or is there any advice on that?
Well, my oldest son is ADHD. And so for him, in supporting him, I've always recommended smaller time blocks, because then the productivity stays high. And it seems like something that is doable, to really go all in for that shorter segment. Whereas if it's an hour and that seems like a long time, then there could be a temptation to do a little multitasking or get off point.
I think you and your son and I probably have a lot in common, is what I think.
Yeah, so there's definitely nothing wrong with having smaller time segments. It's all about productivity and actually getting it done on a regular basis. So I think that works out quite well to have shorter time frames to do some of the things that you know are necessary, but you really don't want to do them.
Thank you. I think that's really helpful. I'm going to give that a go. I'll let you know.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
So Matthew, we are right in the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic here, which has impacted people's lives in so many different ways. And, not only their personal lives, but their professional lives and work that they're doing. And has this pandemic had any impact on the work that you do?
It has, hugely, and I'm sure that I have no concept of how much more it will impact as we carry on.
Right.
Obviously, just like everybody, there's this shifting towards virtual as opposed to live at the moment, and virtually all of my work was live with groups and people, and so doing that has been a learning curve and an exciting learning curve and gives different opportunities. But much more so for me, there was this this element where we have been in isolation, where people are really realizing how important it is for us to connect and how important it is for us to be in physical proximity of each other. And this idea of even simple things like how much people miss like hugs or handshakes or pieces like that.
Right.
And that's a whole part of the coaching and teaching that I always do. And it is like, and I think that hopefully we will realize that. And like any time there's hardship, there's also great opportunity for learning. And to be able to learn how important that is for us, for people, and also how we can do this together as opposed to us being kind of separated or us having different political views or social economic views or colors of skins, how unimportant that is compared with how we're battling right now one single protagonist, which is a virus. and how we can kind of join together. So all of these things tie into the work that I do, and it's going to be very interesting to see how we kind of tap into it and how we come out and people, whether we learn from these lessons or whether we try and go right back to the old normal, which is not going to be a normal, I don't think.
Right, but that will be interesting to see if we try.
Well, the temptation is, we are creatures of habit. We will head right back, or tend to.
Right, yeah, well, that's a very valid point. I am just curious, how do you work with people who really want to tap into and harness this powerful technique for effective communication, storytelling?
It's something that I've kind of developed over the course of the 10 years of doing it. And I'm a big believer that people have to have a reason for it. They have to have, it must mean something to them or an understanding. So I usually start out with why stories work, which for me, I came up with an acronym, which was for CPR, which was first the C. Was that they connect us as human beings. They always have connected us. They always bring us together. And I'm a huge believer that if we don't connect with somebody, then we have very little chance to be able to help that person in any way. And that could be anybody. It can be your business, clients. It could be families. It could be your children. It's like, it's this connection we have to make first. And stories is the unique way that we've always done that as humans. And the P is for persuasion. It's the most persuasive way that we ever can kind of help people to see things that we want them to see. And there was an old English professor called Keith Johnstone, and he wrote a book many years ago called Impro. And in it, he said, people are inhibited from realizing that no action, sound, or motion is innocent of purpose. Mm. And I was thinking about that for myself, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's so true. Every time I talk, every time I move, every time I state something out, that there's a want. And I felt horribly self-serving. And I realized that virtually all of them is to help other people. But if we all have these wants, it makes sense to get good at doing whatever it is that we can do to help other people and to get those wants granted. And story is really the foundational way of being able to do that. Mm-hmm. And then the last part was the recall. It's like you can't expect people to behave and do something differently if they don't understand and remember what it is that you're telling them to do. And stories are phenomenal for how we recall them. We bring them back. Now, remember it is another way of saying it. And there was a cognitive scientist, Bruner, who said that information delivered in the form of a story, as opposed to delivered in bullet points and lists, is 22 times more memorable. Mm-hmm. Oh. And I was like, wow. Yeah. And then I was also like, 22, how did you do the math? Not 21 or 11, but it was like, but I don't really care. It could be 8 times. I know I remember stories. I don't come home and go, Susan, you wouldn't believe the 8 bullet points I heard today. I mean, you don't do that. And so it was like, okay, with those three pieces of why it works, I think is a great a great place to start. Mm-hmm. And then we go into why it works. So people then understand, because it's not fluff. People think of story, it's so broad, as being all over the place. You know, it could be like Disney tales and long winded and all the rest.
Right. Once upon a time.
Yeah, exactly. It was like, it's all those pieces. And it's like, no, it's science. It works the same way for all of us all the time. How we receive the information, how we recall information. And so I have little things like, which I like to call RWTs, which are real world tests. And here's one for your audience to kind of just see. And that is, when we have a conversation, invariably what happens is that the other person will interrupt you when you're chatting, especially if it's just casual conversation, and they'll start telling a story that's triggered from the story that you've been telling. Mm-hmm. And there are these little moments. And what's happening is that our brain, the long-term memory, which is our storage unit and holds everything, the only way we can get facts or events out of it is through association. So another way of saying that would be cross-connection. So as soon as I start talking about going skiing in Winter Park and there was 20 inches of snow, a friend of mine will immediately interrupt me and go, I was in Crested Butte the weekend before and there was 30 inches of snow. And then another friend will say, remember when we went mountain biking in Crested Butte and Chris crashed his mountain bike into the tree and had to buy an expensive bike from the Alpineer? And it just flips back and forth. So it's never really the story that you're telling that your audience is interested. It's really their own story. because we're beautifully selfish creatures. And so once you think about that, then think of how you can affect the conversations and be able to draw things out of people and help them be able to see who you are, and they see and you see who they are. And then once we start knowing each other, we have a chance of connecting.
Yeah, I love how you've so clearly drawn that correlation between how it really lays the groundwork for being able to allow us to connect more on a personal and trusting level. Once our stories kind of start triggering each other's memories, and we suddenly realize we have all this common ground. So that's...
You're so accurate there, Wendy. Yeah, I mean, that's exactly how it is.
Right. Yeah. That's a powerful component of the sales process, is establishing that trust. And that's, I had never really thought about the element of storytelling triggering somebody else's memory as part of that facet. So that's fascinating.
And as a salesperson, then you would just listen and they'll tell you it all, and you can probe and prompt and see, and then deliver information about yourself. One of my favorite quotes was from Grover. For the longest time, I thought it was Grover Cleveland. And then for a moment, I thought perhaps it could be the Muppet, which would really excite me if I'm out there quoting, but it's actually Grover Porter who was the gentleman. And it's kind of part of what he said, but it was, reveal yourself or others will reveal you. Mm. And I was thinking about that, and I was like, oh my gosh, I do that all the time. I meet somebody or I drive by somebody on the side of the road and I build a picture about them instantly. And how accurate is it? So if you are meeting with people or leading people and you start telling them what to do, but you haven't revealed anything about yourself, that's where, because you can't tell somebody you're trustworthy. You have to be able to reveal it in an area where you were trustworthy at one point, or you had compassion at one point, or all those incredibly important qualities that you know are important for people to be able to build a relationship around sales.
Right. Yeah. No, that is right on. Very, very, very powerful. So, well, Matthew, how can listeners reach you if they're interested in learning more about working with you?
Well, I would be thrilled if they did. And it's relatively straightforward. I do have a couple of websites, a business one and then my other one, and they kind of blend back and forth. One is MatthewTaylor.com is one, and the other is PersuasionThroughNarrative.com. And there's information on both where people could get hold of me, and for them to know that I love chatting about this stuff. And so if anybody's interested at all, it's like, please reach out. It's always fun to chat with folks.
Yeah, fantastic. So that is MatthewTaylor.com, and that's MatthewTaylor.com, or PersuasionThroughNarrative.com.
Yes, indeed. And I've always struggled to spell the word persuasion myself, but luckily autocorrect will probably get you there.
All right. Well, fantastic. Well, Matthew, you've already shared so many golden nuggets of wisdom and human nature here, how we kind of function and the different aspects of being effective as communicators. I would like to tap on you though one more time here during our interview for your knowledge. In looking at your own experience in building your business, what's maybe some sound advice that you can share with a frustrated entrepreneur who's maybe questioning their own decision to have started their own business, or maybe they're doubting their ability to succeed?
Yeah, and I think we all have that all the time. That self-doubt at times is overwhelming, and it's just part of human nature. The first thing I would say would be, trust yourself. There was a reason that you decided to do it, and usually those core reasons most of the time are right. And so just knowing that deep down, that is there, and is something to kind of pull kind of some solace from. Mm-hmm. The other part was a quote that I use all the time to myself, which was from Eleanor Roosevelt, as you should say. And it was, comparison is the thief of joy. Mm. And I was like, oh my gosh, I compare myself to other people who are in my field, and then I get all overwhelmed because they're so brilliant or talented or famous or wealthy or whatever it is. And I'm like, why are you doing that? certainly compare yourself to wonderful people in the field, but only if it serves you, and never put yourself up and think that you're in competition with it. And so that's something that for me, I've always come back to. It's like, just do it for the right reasons and don't compare yourself for the wrong reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's powerful. I love that. That's, both of those are very powerful. Trust yourself. I love that, where you added to that, you know, there is a reason why that idea came to you, and trust that. I love that. Yeah. And, comparison is the thief of joy. That's, yes, indeed. That is very relevant for entrepreneurs, especially when they're starting out. So fantastic. Well, Matthew, this has been just so great getting to hear about your journey from an actor starting ACE, is it ACE Entertainment, and how that launched and went down various different pathways to, you know, how you're doing work currently through your, not only your acting and your writing and speaking, but also with this persuasion through narrative coaching. This is, it's just phenomenal. I've really, really enjoyed our conversation, and want to thank you so much for being our guest today.
Well, thank you, Wendy. This has been an absolute treat, and I so appreciate the time that you spent with me. It's been very fun.
Oh, good. I'm glad that you've enjoyed it, because I know that all our listeners will. So we can reach Matthew at matthewtaylor.com or persuasionthroughnarrative.com. All right. Well, fantastic. And for all our listeners, remember, when it comes to building a business that brings you joy and has an endless flow of high-paying clients, well, don't overlook the power of the optimized sales conversation, where you've triggered all four psychological states, generally through stories, needed for your prospective clients to feel confident and excited about saying, yeah, this sounds great, what's next? So, are you 100% confident that your sales conversations are optimized, or are you shrugging off the lost sale by saying, well, they just weren't my ideal client? So if you're curious, reach out to me and apply for a sales blind spot coaching session. You may be surprised by what we discover. All right. Well, this is Wendy Vaughn, Chief Paradigm Shifter and Sales Success Coach. And you can find me in our next podcast episode at predictablesalesresults.com. All right. Well, thank you for tuning in to today's episode with Matthew Taylor. And as always, here's to your success.